apostles today, new apostolic reformation. One more time, we're going to separate fact from fiction.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I have been able to piece some things together to get further insight into some of the confusion today and even the hysteria regarding NAR, the New Apostolic Reformation. And I'm going to be joined by a friend that was just on with me recently who is a firsthand observer to the actual New Apostolic Reformation and who has a lot to say about that. This is Michael Brown. And I want to take one last shot at this topic. It comes up mainly from certain critical circles, and most of the folks I travel with around the world don't know what I'm talking about when I bring this up. But with the goal of educating, equipping, understanding, separating fact from fiction, I'm taking a few more minutes to devote to the subject. I think a lot of things are going to fall into place for you today. If you have a question specifically related to apostolic ministry today or the so-called NAR, here's the number to call, 866-348-7884. In a moment, I'm going to be joined again by my friend, Dr. Joseph Matera, who leads a U.S. organization of, quote, apostolic leaders, and who can tell us in detail about the original NAR, New Apostolic Reformation. Before I bring Dr. Matera on, this is what got me wondering about these things. I believe it was last year when Wretched Radio began advertising a DVD called Drunk in the Spirit. And they said this on their website: the world's fastest growing sect of Christianity is not Christian at all. Not Christian. And chances are very high that your child and church are getting infected. What? Then it said this: the new Apostolic Reformation movement and the Jesus Culture worship band boasts of 369 million adherents. And then this: the new Apostolic Reformation worships God drunk in the spirit, and they teach scant amounts of truth. Christians do not need to be aware of each and every false teacher on the planet, but the new Apostolic Reformation is the most influential aberrant movement the church has ever seen. I heard an ad for this on the air, and I thought, what in the world are they talking about? Well, New Apostolic Reformation was something that Peter Wagner was involved with. What's this thing allegedly with 369 million adherents worldwide that's not even Christian at all? And then all this hysteria surrounding it. And that's when I began to see all these different groups, leaders, organizations were being put together under this alleged NAR. So three separate things that I'm going to bring on Dr. Matera. Number one, for decades, I have believed that there were apostles and prophets today, along with evangelists, pastors, and teachers, not with the authority of a New Testament apostle like Paul or John, not like an Old Testament prophet like Isaiah or Jeremiah, but New Testament apostles and prophets. I saw scriptural evidence for that and really saw it working through history, even if the people didn't have those titles. That's one thing. Second thing is Peter Wagner led a movement that was widely identified as New Apostolic Reformation. And I had differences with that. I was never part of that. Appreciated some of it, different with other parts. And now there's this other thing called NAR where everything is put under this heading. And that is what I say does not exist, this worldwide conspiratorial movement. So with that, we're going to sort things out with someone that's really an eyewitness to so much of this and who believes in apostolic ministry today and who believes the real New Apostolic Reformation needs reformation. My friend, Dr. Joe Matera. Joe, thanks for coming right back on the show with us. You were on just a couple weeks ago talking about your new book, The Divided Gospel.
Yeah, what a joy to be with you. I appreciate all the hard work and incredible scholarship that goes along with your radio show. Thank you for having me on again.
Well, my joy. All right. The New Apostolic Reformation, as you were familiar with it, we don't deny this exists, never have. This is what we're familiar with. with Dr. Peter Wagner. What are the origins? What were your thoughts about it? What was your involvement, if any, with it?
Well, my overseer, John Kelly, was asked in 1999 to gather 30 leaders of networks, independent Christian networks, in the city of Singapore, in the country of Singapore, and they met for 3 days just to compare notes, and at the end of a few days, they decided they should continue to meet, and they called it the International Coalition of Apostles. And John led it for a year, I think it was. I could be wrong, could be 2 years. And then he felt like Peter Wagner had more national prominence, and he asked Peter to lead it. So Peter, as a missiologist slash sociologist, he basically led it. And as Peter always does, he gives terms to things. And he wound up calling it a new apostolic reformation. And what he meant by that was that this was not a movement necessarily led by historic denominational leaders or denominations. So he was trying to think of a new way of framing the fastest growing segment of global Christianity, which is led by visionary leaders of independent networks. So he coined the phrase the New Apostolic Reformation. There was no conspiratorial background. There was no organization. It was loosely affiliated. People came, people went. There was no ordination certificates or anything. People just gathered once a year. It ultimately grew to about 350 people under Peter's guidance. And I didn't agree with some of the things. But the thing is, it was such a loose organization. There was diversity in eschatology. Some were dispensational premillennials. Some were postmillennials. Some were amillennials. Some were classical premillennial. Some were believed that the baptism of the Holy Spirit had the evidence of speaking in tongues. Others were third wave evangelicals like Peter, who believed that everybody was baptized in the Spirit. And that you didn't have to speak in tongues if you were baptized in the Spirit. So there was such a divergence of people involved. It would have been next to impossible to have a conspiracy.
All right. So even if we get back from the conspiracy part, so just to understand this, we were used to Christian denominations. So you have Presbyterian, you have Lutheran, you have Southern Baptist, you have Assemblies of God, these different denominations. And that was much of the church worldwide. And then you had something where you might have had a visionary leader that started a church planting movement. And then that grew like John Wimber, say, in the Vineyard movement or something like that. And they didn't call themselves a denomination, but yet they were rapidly growing and spreading. And widely diverse. So some Pentecostal, some charismatic, some other nuances of things, some house church, some mega church, some pre-trib rapture, some dominionist. But what was different about them was that they had these visionary kind of organic movement growth as opposed to just being part of a denomination. Is that what Peter Wagner was trying to identify?
Yes. And the impetus for that was actually 1995, I think it was in Fuller, when he had a post-denominational symposium. And he realized that a lot of the leaders and or movements globally were not led by denominations. Now, the people could be in a denomination, but he was actually saying this is post-denominational. Now, I don't agree that the day is over for denominations. Neither did a lot of people. But he stopped using the term post-denominational, and he started using the term apostolic reformation. But he's just talking about how we're not limited by the territorial, denominational, historical landmines that existed the past several hundred years.
All right, so that was the name that he put on it, and then it became maybe more narrowly associated with being part of Peter Wagner's organization or movement. And from what I could tell, it then seems to me that anyone today who believes in fivefold ministry or who was part of Peter Wagner's organization, that somehow everybody gets grouped under this heading of NAR, even if they never heard of it or knew what it was, and that this is this nefarious, aberrant movement spreading around the world. And that's why it's so difficult to deal with this, because, for example, one website says, if you want to try to identify a NAR church, we'll see if they have 24/7 prayer. It's like, since when did 24/7 prayer make you part of the quote, New Apostolic Reformation. So I want to read a description to you and get your reaction, okay? This is from, I think it's the Berean Examiner website, and it says this: the New Apostolic Reformation, or NAR, is a counterfeit, unbiblical movement that has been gaining worldwide momentum. Its anointed celebrity leaders, meanwhile, are scurrying to distance themselves from the NAR label, invented by NAR founder C. Peter Wagner, especially now that discernment reporters have been shining light of Scripture and the sheep have begun to take notice. All right, so first thing, your response to that, I just to be candid, sent you a bunch of websites with critics that were attacking me and you. You had never heard of these folks. So as far as you know, are people scurrying because of these so-called discernment reporters?
Well, I just hope they spell my name right. That's all I can say. I mean, I've never heard of these people, and I don't know what kind of influence they have. But I'm not coming across much criticism at all. I know it's out there, but what I'm seeing is the opposite. I'm seeing evangelicals embracing the fivefold ministry. I'm seeing the missional church movement begin to use the language of apostolic as prophetic. They're expanding it because they realize that if we are limited to a twofold ministry, the Jesus movement is going to be static. But if we embrace the fivefold ministry, we're going to have a movement. We're going to have the great expansion of Christianity like we saw in the New Testament pattern. And the line is going to be blurred more and more and more, like it is presently between evangelical and charismatic. That line between apostolic and evangelical is going to be so blurred in 5 or 10 years, they're not going to know who the NAR is. I mean, so we have mainstream evangelicals, people who identify with LaSalle, people who identify with the evangelical groups, global groups in the world, who are now using the term apostolic the way we do. We don't use it as an office. We use it as an adjective. Paul wasn't called the Apostle Paul. He was Paul an apostle. So we don't call it an office. We say it's an adjective. It's a function. It's a description of a ministry. So we get away from the classical, hierarchical, institutionalism of the word apostle when we say apostolic and prophetic. I think that's safer. And I think we avoid some of the errors that have taken place in the past by some leaders, not all.
Got it. All right, listen, we come back, we're going to keep unpacking this. Remember, Dr. Matera has been a pastor for decades in Brooklyn. He works with denominational leaders in New York City and around the world. So we're not talking about some exclusive club. We're just trying to identify what God is doing and then separate myth from fact when it comes to the so-called NAR. Be right back.
Fire we want, for fire we please.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, I'm looking at something. Oh, let's see how far back this goes. 2011, Dr. Peter Wagner wrote, "The roots of the NAR, New Apostolic Reformation, go back to the beginning of the African Independent Church Movement in 1900, the Chinese House Church Movement beginning in 1976, the U.S. Independent Charismatic Movement beginning in the 70s, and the Latin American Grassroots Church Movement beginning around the same time." He said, "I was neither the founder nor a member of any of these movements. I was simply a professor who observed that they were the fastest growing churches in their respective regions and that they had a number of common characteristics." That's what he called the New Apostolic Reformation, which, again, bears very little resemblance to what the critics are attacking as NAR. And I'll give you a list of everybody they include in that in a moment. So what Peter Wagner is discussing, what Dr. Matera is discussing, is what God's doing around the world. Not rejecting denominations, not moving just outside of denominations, but moving in a way that is more organic and even has more potential of churchwide unity in different cities and nations as the body comes together. Not some false ecumenical movement, but recognizing what God's doing and people of like heart and mind working together. And the greatest is the servant of all, not the boss or lord over others. So that's how the term is used broadly. And then Peter Wagner very much became associated with his writings on this and certain teaching he gave apostles in the marketplace. And it seemed like every pastor is calling themselves an apostle, things like that, and developing their own, quote, apostolic networks. That's what I knew then as New Apostolic Reformation. And then Dr. Matera has been writing about where that needs reformation. So there's what Dr. Wagner described, this generic worldwide thing that God was doing, thoroughly orthodox in its biblical foundations. Then there was a more narrow movement that he was leading specifically that had more specific parameters. Then there's what the critics referred to, all right? And that's what I keep debunking, what the critics referred to. And let me say this again. In my new book, Playing with Holy Fire, I deal with abuses in the term apostle and apostle by acquisition. You know, I just take over others and I become this big shot apostle, or putting my name on the card, Apostle Michael Brown, or nonsense like that. Okay, for me, it'd be nonsense. So I talk about that. And if you have an issue with one church here or one church there, I'm very happy to talk about specific abuses. I have several chapters on abusive leaders and abusive and prophetic ministry. I'm happy to talk about abuses. Just don't put it under this whole mythical headline together. So getting back to Dr. Matera, Joe, you have been a local pastor. Your church in Brooklyn continues. You 100% support local leaders, and you know that the local church is the nucleus of what God does in every community. But when you talk about twofold ministry, pastor, teacher, or pastor, evangelist, and you say that the church won't be what it's supposed to be without apostolic prophetic ministry, what does that look like? How does it work itself out?
Yeah, well, the pastoral role, more or less, is for maintenance, for care, for preservation, protection. But God gave the apostolic and prophetic ministries, as he says in 1 Corinthians chapter 28, he said first in the church apostles, secondarily prophets. Those are more of the pioneers. Those are the ones who expand the territory of kingdom influence. Those are the ones who plant churches and who begin to preach in such a way that it says those who turn the world upside down have come here in Acts chapter 17. They're the ones who have shown in, you know, Acts chapter 19, when Paul planted a church in Ephesus, it says the word of the Lord went out to all of Asia, and then it changed and challenged the economic values of that whole city. That even it caused a riot because they wouldn't buy the idols anymore, and they weren't able to purvey their false gods anymore because the gospel permeated culture. So the apostolic leaders are the ones who basically can influence a city, a community, and again, plant churches and all that kind of thing. But they leave in their place. When they leave a church, they put pastors, they put elders, people who are going to care for the flock. So it's never to overthrow the pastoral ministry. It's to uphold it. It's to help them. It's to support them. It's to protect them. It's to be a pastor to pastors. That's what an apostolic leader is. Some of these people who are critics of NAR don't understand what they're talking about. They believe that apostles are trying to overthrow pastoral leaders. Now, has that happened? Maybe it has. I don't know. One of the tricks that people who are opponents of particular movements have is they identify a whole movement by its radical fringe.
Yeah.
But the proponents that I work with of apostolic ministry, both evangelicals and charismatics, would never in a million years think about overthrowing pastors. We know the local church is front and center of everything God wants to do. We want to help them. We want to support them. We want to be a resource to them. And that's who we are.
Yeah,
and we have networks.
Let me just say this one thing to everyone listening and watching. I get links sent to me of different critics' websites, Twitter feeds, things like that, that I don't personally get. But I get them sent to me sometimes on a daily basis, where the latest show was being attacked and critiqued. So I'm glad as a critic that you're listening. I generally am. Listening, watching, if we differ, we differ. But I'm glad at least you're listening or watching. But why not call in? Why not call in and say, this is who I am. Here's my website. I'm one of these guys that attacks you all the time or differs with you or thinks you're really erroneous or lying to people. Call in, okay? You post comments on YouTube, call me a liar. Call in, by all means. I'm glad you're listening. I'm truly glad you're listening, watching. But call in if you're listening, watching live, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. So let's ask this. We understand the critically important role of the shepherds. Every elder needs to be a shepherd of some kind, overseeing the flock. But there's pressure that can be put on pastors. That's not a right pressure. Some call it sola pastora, that it's just the pastor. And the pastor has to do everything. And if the pastor's not shaking the city while nurturing the flock, if the pastor's not sprouting out new works while caring for the flock, the pastor's not doing the right thing. But pastors are called primarily to be shepherds, right? They're, you know, so there are the people that go in, as you're saying, the trailblazers, the pioneers. Doesn't this then take pressure off the local church to say, hey, you be who you are and shepherd and nurture the flock and strengthen it, let the church do the work of evangelism, and let the pioneers and the prophetic voices do what they're called to do?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And to try to, you know, even to reframe that, if someone's called as an apostolic leader and they try to act as a pastor and stay in a confined, you know, job description of just visiting the sick and making, you know, counseling appointments and just preaching and staying in one church the rest of their life, they may feel constrained. And so if we embrace the fivefold ministry, we make room for these pioneering entrepreneurs. At the same time, we take pressure off the pastors who are being pressured to be these entrepreneurs and pioneers. And we all work together and support each other. And we have a 1 Corinthians 12 kind of mosaic where the hand can't say to the foot, I don't need you. We all work together as members of the body of Christ.
And where things have gone, say, with denominations, John Wesley was clearly an apostolic man. And then you had some of the early founders of Methodism in America were clearly apostolic leaders. Is there a point where something that was organic and reproductive can become top-heavy or too structural? This can happen with any group, any movement. I'm not throwing stones, but I'm just asking, is there something where something starts in an apostolic way, the way you're describing it, which is how most denominations really started, and then something comes in where it stagnates or gets too structured? Does that often happen?
Yeah, usually the first generation is a visionary generation, a pioneering, an expanding generation. Usually the second or third generation, people look for an administrative leader to perpetuate what was already accomplished and to maintain it, but oftentimes it loses its relevancy and becomes static. But to ensure that that doesn't happen, if we recognize fivefold ministry and embrace it, we would pick apostolic visionary leaders to continue to lead these huge movements or networks, that will ensure that it is continuing to expand and, you know, be on the cutting edge of what God is doing and saying. And, you know, you bring up a good point about all these denominations. They all started off as organic apostolic movements, and if they were around today, they would be considered under the rubric of NAR and criticized as well. So John Wesley would be criticized, and some of the other great spiritual leaders and fathers of history would be criticized because of the way they started. It looks very similar to what we're seeing today in a global way.
Right. So some of the denominational leaders, if they were still leading, and hopefully some of them are, but if they were still leading in this apostolic, visionary, planting, expanding way, then this would be exactly what you're talking about. In other words, it can have a denominational name or not. That's not the issue. The issue is, how is it functioning?
Yeah. I mean, in my book, Essays on Apostolic Leadership, that I use a lot to lecture on this stuff, you know, I talk about the cycles. And the cycle is, you know, visionary leader, then it becomes maintenance, then it becomes institutionalized, and then it needs to be, you know, redefined and actually, you know, put fire in it again, you know. And so what I talk to apostolic leaders about is, don't put down denominations, because you're just in the first part of a cyclical pattern. And if your network continues, you'll probably want to be in a denomination. So what we have to do is not criticize denominations, but get ahead of the cyclical norm and ensure that we can't ensure this, but aim for revival and revitalization in every new generation of leaders that we raise up by having the proper patterns in place.
So, friends, if you want to know what I believe, that's what I believe. What Dr. Matera is describing, that's what I believe in. That's what I'm part of, okay? Call that what you want to call it. That's what I'm part of. You find any of that heretical, I say you take that up with God and His Word. Because I say, This is something that he's doing and he's backing. But we're just getting started. Stay with us.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us today. Friends, I had a few wonderful days in Toronto. Thanks for being part of our live broadcast from Toronto. Flew back home yesterday, got home, kissed my bride, talked, kissed my bride, left today. Yeah, and flying out to Dallas. I'll be ministering. One of our grads has a school of evangelism. I'll be speaking for them, God willing, tomorrow, coming your way live from Dallas tomorrow. But everyone in the DFW area, if you're free Wednesday night, so May 2nd, Wednesday night, Gospel Lighthouse Church on Illinois Avenue in Dallas, Texas, Gospel Lighthouse Church. Check out the itinerary on my website, askdrbrown.org. So a quick review for you. Around the world, for decades, God has been moving in dynamic ways in many different circles, charismatic, Pentecostal, others that wouldn't identify in that way, with church planting movements, with house church movements, some under persecution that could not be part of a denomination because it was not legal to be, others because they were just birthed outside of denominations, some within denominations. Peter Wagner, Dr. Peter Wagner, as a professor, dubbed this the New Apostolic Reformation. It is broad-based, and the participants would hold to the fundamentals of the gospel as reflected in the Apostles' Creed or the Nicene Creed and things like that, but widely diverse. Dr. Wagner himself led a loose coalition of apostolic leaders and wrote much on this. And when I heard the term New Apostolic Reformation, that's what I understood it to be. I was just talking to a colleague in Toronto, a leader that was there, and I asked him, when you hear NAR, New Apostolic Reformation, what do you think? He goes, well, it was a good attempt. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, Peter Wagner, he tried to do certain things, but I was never part of it because I differed with XYZ. I said, you're not aware of this worldwide thing called NAR? He goes, no. I said, do you know you're a leader? And he goes, what are you talking about? He was shocked. So that's how I've known it, this specific thing called NAR. And then there's Fivefold Ministry that I believed in. Dr. Joe Matera, my guest today, has a book on essays on apostolic ministry that really gives you an understanding of what we mean by this. I had my colleague, Dr. Bob Gladstone, on with me a few days ago, and we talked about this, what we mean by fivefold ministry. It has nothing to do with taking over. It has nothing to do with lording it over others. It has zero to do with the idea that you have this super anointing and are equal to the 12 apostles. Utter nonsense. I've never met a leader, apostolic leader today, who believes that about themselves. All right? But there are many things we do believe in terms of pioneering, fathering, church planting. Certain leaders, they're kind of recognized in their city as like the spiritual father of the city, and all the different pastors and leaders look to them. These are often apostolic type leaders. That's what we believe in. So we're trying to separate this from this mystical thing called NAR. And I want to get this take from Dr. Matera. I want to read a description to you, sir. Tell me your reaction to this. This is an alleged description. Well, this is a description of the alleged NAR on a Berean Examiner website. It says this: supernatural signs and wonders, dominionism, the latter rain movement, Joel's army, the Seven Mountain Mandate, third wave revivalism, IHOP, Bill Johnson's Bethel Church, the Hillsong Media Empire. These are all a part of the shape-shifting movement in one way or another. It is gobbling up churches and deceiving millions who don't even know they become part of an apostate end times falling away. As a theologian and as a careful theological teacher, what's your take on that statement?
Well, I mean, it's definitely a diverse group that they lump together. I mean, I'm not in agreement with some of those groups mentioned, but the point is, and some of the practices, not all of it, but the point is, I think that these are people driven by fear. They've created their own bogeyman, and I don't think anybody should be afraid of true apostolic prophetic leaders that God has ordained, according to Ephesians 4, to continue until there is unity in the faith and complete knowledge and fullness of the Son of God, which hasn't happened yet. So if they're against apostolic leadership, they're fighting against God himself. I mean, it wasn't just the 12 apostles. I think there were 70 apostles mentioned in the New Testament, out of respect for the 12. The early church stopped calling them apostles after the original 12 passed away, and they started using the word bishop instead. So that's the etymology of that. But nobody claims to be equal to the original 12 and or Paul or any of the writers of Scripture. And, you know, lumping all those movements together, I mean, I'm not even fully aware of what a lot of them do. I don't think I've ever heard Bill Johnson preach a message, never went to IHOP, but the idea that having 24/7 prayer is a bad thing, I mean, sign me up for that. I wish our church had 24/7 prayer. I mean, that would lump me together with Zinzendorf, who in the Moravian movement had a prayer meeting, didn't stop for 100 years, which became the impetus for the modern missionary movement in Protestantism. So sign me up for that, if that could happen here.
Yeah, and again, one website of one critic says, if you're trying to identify in our church, see if it has 24/7 prayer. And, you know, when you mentioned the boogeyman kind of thing, it reminds me of global warming. Everything is global warming. Everything we do is global warming. We're all part of this plot to destroy the whole earth. Like, what are you talking about? So again, we all deal with abuses, and no one differs with the fact that there are abuses. There are abuses in charismatic churches. There are abuses in non-charismatic churches. There are abuses in house church movements. There are abuses in megachurch movements. We all deal with them. You and I constantly write corrective articles. You've written some of the strong stuff. In fact, friends, go to Dr. Matera's website, Joseph Matera, M-A-T-T-E-R-A, Joseph Matera, is it .com or .org?
.org, and I have a two-part article, the NAR and the Restoration of Apostolic Ministry. I think it's very pertinent to this discussion. It's on my website.
Got it. All right, so josephmatera.com. Go there.
.org.
People do that with my website all the time when I'm on radio. All right, so listen, I want to shout this out loudly. For decades, I have said I believe in apostolic ministry. For decades. I gladly say that I work with Mike Bickle, that I work with Joseph Matera, that I work with different, no shame in that, joyful, glad to say it, all right? I believe in fivefold ministry. No argument with that. And yet, what we're saying is this alleged NAR thing, for example, Hillsong. Hillsong, I think, is Assemblies of God. Didn't Brian Houston lead the Australian Assemblies of God? The Assemblies of God put out a position paper saying that there are no apostles and prophets today, but apostolic and prophetic people. The Assemblies of God is not, quote, part of NAR, yet Hillsong is Assemblies of God. And we're told Hillsong is NAR. So if you like Hillsong music, you're part of NAR. It's this boogeyman thing. That's what we're refuting. So if someone wants to say, well, I have a problem with what Hillsong teaches, fine, we'll discuss that. I've got no formal association with them, but fine, we can discuss it. I heard Mike Bickle talking about eschatology. I have a question. Great. We can discuss it. Just don't put everything under this boogeyman heading NAR. That's what we're saying. There's no lack of clarity or no denial of it. There's nothing to deny. I gladly hold to these positions. I've got nothing to deny. I'll debate them scripturally as well, Dr. Matera. So let's talk about one other pinpoint thing, and then I want to get into some of your article. Dominionism or postmillennialism, are those one and the same? What do you agree with in that? What do you differ with?
Yeah, I mean, there's subsets of postmillennialism, so even they have differences among themselves. But in terms of dominionism, Peter Wagner used the term the Dominion Covenant, but the thing is, I'm not sure exactly what he meant by that, but in Genesis 1:28, God said they have dominion over the fish of the sea, birds of the air, and over every creeping thing. That was before people populated the earth. Mm-hmm. So it was never dominion over people. It was dominion over the created order. So I don't use that terminology now. I don't use the terminology taking your cities, all of that stuff, which, by the way, was first the phrase taking your cities was from a book by John Dawson, hardly
yes.
a dominionist.
Yep.
Taking your cities for God, which he was just simply meaning reach our cities, permeated with the gospel. So, again, when someone says taking your city, I don't know what they mean. They could mean just evangelizing or doing prayer walks or changing the atmosphere. So there's just so much diversity in all these words that we have to define the terms first. So what I mean by Genesis 1:28, the cultural mandate, is influence. Jesus washed the feet of his disciples. He said, the same way I wash your feet, so you ought to wash one another's feet. So the New Testament equivalent to the dominion mandate is to influence by servant leadership. When you have the best solutions, when you love your city the most, when you practically serve them as local churches and Christians, then people will want you to lead them, and or people will benefit, and you'll bring your whole community up to another level. Who's preaching a dominion kingdom now where we're supposed to take over? Maybe what they mean is they think we are saying the institutional church is supposed to have a political rule over a nation. I don't know one person who believes the institutional church should rule a nation. I don't know one person who believes that every nation is going to be Christianized. I don't know one person who believes that everybody in America or in the world is going to be saved one day. So I'm not even sure what they mean by dominionism. What most people don't realize is that the original founders of the United States were Puritan postmillennialists, and it was their understanding that they were called to reflect God's kingdom, God's jurisdiction on earth as it is in heaven, which became the impetus after a few hundred years of Reformation preaching and teaching of the original documents of the United States. Hardly anything evil in that, I don't think.
Jonathan Edwards thought that with great revival we could enter the millennium, that the church would spread so much and so many people would come to faith and the society become so Christian it would usher in the millennium. You know, I think some people may lump us together with theonomists or those who want to see a theocracy. So a theonomist may be a Gary North or Rush Dooney, who would say that the goal is to enforce biblical law over a nation, and that a theocracy would be where spiritual leaders, you know, priests or popes or whoever would run the nation, just like you have a theocracy in Iran with the Ayatollahs running that nation. But that is something that we all categorically fight against. There'd be a disaster if the church tries to take over the society and enforce Christian principles on the world.
I mean, we saw what happened after Constantine got converted. The church went from a movement to an institution, and then when the church tried to rule nations, that was a disaster. You had the Inquisition and other things. But I do believe that the Ten Commandments should be the ethics of a nation if that can happen.
Yeah. So we'll come back to that. We'll come right back to that. We got a break. How can we have positive influence without trying to rule the nation?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I believe in apostolic ministry today. I have for decades, just based on what I saw the scripture saying, and then as I began to see how God used apostolic and prophetic people in history, and then saw them in our midst and realized, okay, this is not just a pastor evangelist, this is some of the different calling, and here's how it all works together. My guest, Dr. Joseph Matera, has done some great writing and teaching on this. As a spiritual father, as an elder, as someone who pastored in Brooklyn for decades and worked with churchwide movements in the city, and he currently leads the U.S. Coalition of Apostolic Leaders. This was an organization once associated with Dr. Wagner. But Joe, before you took this over, agreed to take it over, you insisted on the name being changed from Coalition of Apostles to Coalition of Apostolic Leaders. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
And what was the reason for that?
Because I worked across the board with many evangelical leaders and even Pentecostal denomination like Assembly of God, it would take me a half hour to qualify what I mean by apostle. So it was onerous to me. It wouldn't have helped, and I would have refused to lead an organization with that name. I use it as an adjective, not an office.
All right, so in the early days, I had people come up to me when I first started hearing about New Apostolic Reformation and Dr. Wagner. I had people come up to me. I'm not blaming him for this, but they'd want to sign me up to be part of their network. And I call that apostle by acquisition. And I thought, you know, a planter who's multiplying a work and people are drawn to them, that's one thing. But I don't expand my apostolic portfolio by bringing people in. But when you say apostolic leaders, it can knock down a lot of the misconceptions.
Yeah, I mean, it's just basically a co-collegiality. Nobody has authority over anybody else. There are no super apostles. There's no tithe. There's no credentialing. There's no ordination. It's basically an association where we could interface, exchange information, be inspired by one another. And maybe some of us have developed close covenantal relationships and do even deeper things together. That's all it is.
Yeah, and I've been on some of the conference calls, and just although I'm invited constantly and I'm a member, I've only been to a couple of the meetings, but it's been great, very inspirational, hearing what God's doing through different people, being challenged, and such a diversity of viewpoints. But again, just a collegiality of everyone serving one another. So for folks looking for more, like, oh, this is like the equivalent of the protocols of the elders of Zion and the cabal of 300 Jewish leaders, and these are 300 apostolic leaders poised to take over the world, these just myths and fantasies of the critics, but it is a way to generate fear and, unfortunately, for some, generate funds. So before I come back to the Ten Commandments in society today, you've written a couple of very pertinent articles. It's why I said we should get back on the air and talk about this. Friends, go to josephmatera.org, M-A-T-T-E-R-A.org. But some of where you felt the, quote, New Apostolic Reformation, as it was being understood, needed some reforming. Just mention a couple of key points that folks can find in your articles.
Yes, there were some in the meetings that it would be reported. They would go to a city and proclaim somebody's an apostle over a city or over a nation. There was some autocratic leadership by a few. There was people who called themselves apostles. With the office, there were those who called themselves apostles that had hardly any ministry behind them. You know, just various odd things that most of the members would not agree with and or adhere to. But again, critics will always try to look at the radical fringe and categorize a whole movement that way. So many of us were not comfortable with some of the leaders, not most of them, that were involved in some practices such as those. There might have been more practices and triumphalistic rhetoric, like we're supposed to take a city. You know, I got up and corrected that once in an ICAL gathering, and people stopped using that term. You know, when I explained why Genesis 1:28 has dominion, before there were people. We don't have that now. So I think they stopped using that term, maybe because of what I said, maybe their own research. But, you know, it's give and take, and iron sharpens iron. And when you first are involved in a new movement, you're going to make some mistakes. And they were all innocent mistakes, but they were people who loved the Lord, wanted to do good things, and we're all helping each other evolve into a better place and more biblical place.
Right. So, again, no one is denying that there has been something called the New Apostolic Reformation that had certain beliefs, values, that did certain good, that had certain abuses. No one's denying that. No one is stepping back from believing in fivefold ministry. In fact, we are pushing that. We are encouraging that. My friend, Professor Craig Keener, one of the most respected New Testament scholars in the world, just started blogging about this. He's written about it before. Are there apostles today? You can go to his website, which is CraigKeener.com. And he's got a couple articles, a third one to come. Are there apostles today? And his answer is yes. He believes in that. We are advocating that. We are agreeing with that. We're saying it's good and healthy. And it's just recognizing what God is doing. But please hear what Dr. Matera is saying repeatedly. We're not talking about something hierarchical, taking over, super apostles. These ones, you know, you have to have an apostle of you. No one's saying that. We're talking about recognizing how God works, pioneering church planting, fathering movements, things like that. And then what we're saying is the boogeyman created by the critics is to put all different things happening in Pentecostal charismatic churches and those that believe in fivefold ministry, taking whatever abuses there are, questionable things, grouping them all together and calling that an art. That is what we're saying doesn't exist. So, Joe, I agree with you that to the extent a nation can live by the Ten Commandments, it will be blessed, that these are ways of life that God has given. But how do we turn a nation in that direction? America has a lot of this in its foundations, without trying to take over or force this. You know, we're going to force the whole nation to keep the Sabbath with penalties if they don't. You know, for example, that's one of the Ten Commandments. How do we build a culture where it is the church serving as opposed to the church ruling?
Yeah, I mean, you know, biblically, it's we look at a Republican form of government. I don't mean the Republican Party, but
right.
Governed by representation and elders. And America is basically a Republican, Democratic republic, but it's a democratic system, a vote, so it combines both. And it would be very hard for one church ever to take over, anyway, with the system we have. But basically, I think the people who have the best ideas, people who are the most committed to their goals and to their God, are going to be the ones who are going to have the most influence. And the ones who serve and love their cities will have the most influence. And I believe that the Ten Commandments were given not just for an individual moral code, but it was given to disciple a nation, or to frame the laws, the underpinnings, presupposition of a nation. And I think that if we reflected the Ten Commandments in our nation, especially the last half of it, on how to deal with human beings, starting with honoring our father and mother, if we were to reflect that in our laws, we would be a better country. But we can't do that unless we have the best ideas, unless we have the best leaders that can influence systems, and unless the church does its job of making true disciples and loving their community, people wouldn't even trust Christians to be given that kind of influence or power. But if the right. church becomes Christ-like, people will trust us more because they know, hey, we're not trying to force anything. We're not trying to make you a believer. We're not trying to hurt you. You know, we're here because we love you and we want to help you.
And then people see how we live and they think, wow, that's a better way to live. Your families are healthier and your standards are better, life-giving. And then if a Christian gets elected to office and they're a pro-life Christian, or a Christian gets elected to their school board, or a Christian is the librarian of the local high school, or a Christian is the guidance counselor in the high school, then that Christian hopefully can be a good example and put forward their values, and people say, hey, we agree with these. That's what we're talking about. Friends, if you find that heretical or threatening, it's not like you're looking for a bone to pick. It's you're creating a fight where it doesn't exist. All right, listen, Matt from Minneapolis just called in couple minutes ago. We're in the middle of conversation. Sir, I understand you've got some critical views. If you can call in the beginning of the show tomorrow, I will do my best to take your call towards the beginning of the show, Matt. All right. There's no sense bringing you on for 30 seconds, having to cut you off and then not being able to respond. But if you'd like to continue the conversation with a call tomorrow, Matt, I will put you at the head of the list, and Howard, our call screener, will take note of that. And Joe, again, we live in a world where we're trying to reach everyone. And it happens that in my world, because I'm on radio, I deal with cultural issues. My latest article, There's Nothing Funny About Abortion, seems to be going viral today. Folks should read that and share it. So I'm dealing with cultural issues, dealing with Jewish apologetics, biblical scholarship. So I have a lot of folks that follow our work that are not charismatic, that are not Pentecostal, and that are scared by this whole NAR thing, this alleged movement, according to Wretched Radio, it's not Christian at all, that's influencing 369 million people in apostasy. So for the sake of many listening and following that don't understand these things or differ, I'm trying to take time to set the record straight. But we understand that those that don't believe are saved. Someone flipped out that I said Peter Wagner's with the Lord. What? He's with the Lord. Someone else attacked me for saying Billy Graham's going on to be with the Lord, or for saying Mike Bickle is saved. Some people flip out over these things. So what can we say? We can't help everyone. We do our best. But Joe, thank you for taking a full hour with us. The website, Joseph Matera, MATTERA.org. Thanks so much, Joe, for joining us today.
It's always a pleasure. Anytime. Thanks for all the great work you do, Mike.
All right. God bless.